tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world views and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
The American cornucopia, a superabundance of food unparalleled in human history. Of all the food commodities that move in world trade, the United States accounts for some 80% of soybeans, nearly three-quarters of all the corn, and more than half of all wheat and flour. But now a devastating drought is beginning to afflict the agricultural heartland of the United States. Many fear the Dust Bowl days may be returning. And the question is, can we continue to feed the rest of the world as well as ourselves? What happens when drought and weather upsets take their inevitable toll here at home? Are we preparing for these lean years? Or will we continue to go our merry way, assuming it just can't happen here? Climatologists warn that we may be in for some really tough weather problems if the patterns of the last several decades are any kind of a clue. There have been at least eight successive dry periods east of the Rockies, spaced 20 to 22 years apart. At the same time, there appears to be a major global cooling trend, a change in weather patterns worldwide. Many meteorologists feel this gradual cooling trend is going on, at least in the northern hemisphere, and it's going to seriously affect crops in the growing season, perhaps from now right on out. There's been a definite change in the weather worldwide. From all indications, it may put a big damper on our efforts to stay ahead of that food versus population curve and to feed the Earth's hungry billions. Over the last few decades, climatologists have noticed a cooling trend emerging from the masses of meteorological data available to them. Temperatures peaked around 1945 and have been dropping ever since. The favorable weather period we've just lived through, according to Reed Bryson, a noted meteorologist from the University of Wisconsin, has been the most abnormal of the past 1,000 years. From 1880 to 1940, the world, particularly in the northern hemisphere, went through a period of significant warming. I heard this from tall, quiet-spoken Dr. Murray Mitchell, Jr. of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. He is one of this nation's most respected climatologists. He went on, and I quote, "But since about 1940, there has been a distinct drop in average global temperature. It's fallen about half a degree Fahrenheit, even more in high latitudes of the northern hemisphere. England's annual growing season shrank by 9 or 10 days between 1950 and 1966, Hubert Lamb noted. In the northern tier of the United States Midwest, summer frosts again occasionally damage crops. Sea ice has returned to Iceland's coasts after more than 40 years of virtual absence. Glaciers in Alaska and Scandinavia have slowed their recession, and yet some in Switzerland have begun to advance. This cooling of the Earth's climate has also prevented moisture-laden equatorial air from reaching the badly parched African sub-Sahara region. The extended drought that followed was responsible for the massive famines that occurred there in the early 1970s. With food grain reserves dropping to record low levels, a good harvest every year has become a virtual imperative. That means optimum weather will be essential if humanity expects to stay in the ballpark and play its losing food versus population game. And much of the credit for these tremendous yield increases over the last 15 years should be attributed to optimum weather conditions, according to John McQuigg, a leading government climatologist at the University of Missouri. He said, and I quote, "The probability of getting another 15 consecutive years of good weather is about 1 out of 10,000. Dr. Reed Bryson echoes McQuigg's forebodings. He said, and I quote, "There's very important climatic change going on right now, and it's not merely something of academic interest. It is something that, if it continues, will affect the whole human occupation of the earth, like a billion people starving." Now, these doomsday seeming biblical prophecies out of some obscure book such as Isaiah, Jeremiah, or maybe the Apocalypse are not coming from wild-eyed biblical prophets, as some people might say these scientists might appear to them. I remember in one occasion, one leading scientist who was talking about the food versus population curve, about pollution, and what we're doing to this earth of ours, was called the Jeremiah of modern science. But these are serious men making statements that are so awesome they boggle the mind. The starvation of a billion human beings? But we take this casually. We're jaded, we're exhausted, we're living in a time where bad news comes with our morning toast and coffee. We live in a nuclear-armed world, a world of exploding population, a world of dramatically changing climatic and weather trends, a world of political upset, a world of nuclear proliferation, and we're tired of hearing all of this. We'd like to get ours while the getting is good and live our day in the sun and have our fun and let the world go away and come back some other day. We like to play the little game of hide and go seek, of hide our minds from that which does exist and seek our day-to-day personal physical pleasures and not really face the future. But believe it or not, the future is going to come crushing in on us, and what is happening right now in Europe, in Asia and Africa, and principally inside the United States and Canada, as drought afflicts many of our chief food-growing states, is going to come crushing in on your daily way of life. Now, the effects of these drastic changes are showing up in various ways. Bryson feels that the life-giving monsoons that have so far provided marginal subsistence to many areas of the third world may not return with any sort of regularity during the rest of this century. According to Fortune magazine, if he, that is Bryson, were correct, there would seem to be scant prospect that even the present populace of the monsoon belts can be maintained, even if all the arable land in the rest of the world were placed in full production for this purpose. Even relatively minor climatic changes could easily tip the present precarious food population balance in the wrong direction. According to Henry Lansford of the National Center for Atmospheric Research, it will not take an apocalyptic climatic event such as the onset of a new ice age to bring about great human suffering from famine. And the chances of this occurring are not all that remote. According to Lansford, quote, the climate trends that some scientists are predicting could bring us to the point of catastrophic consequences between the increasing population and inadequate food supplies much sooner than many people expect. Meanwhile, it is drought in Africa. Most of the people afflicted by these climatic changes live in a so-called hunger belt, where at least 60% are malnourished and 20% more are starving. The hunger belt includes many nations near the Earth's equator, but particularly hard hit are the nations just south of the Sahara. In the past 6 years, the Sahara has expanded 100 miles southward in some places. In recent years, it's been averaging about 30 miles a year. The Sahara is already the largest desert in the world, covering an area more than 3 million square miles, larger than the continental United States. Some 25 million people live in the present drought area of the southern fringes of the Sahara. This region includes six of the world's poorest and least known countries. The nations that are severely afflicted are Mauritania, Senegal, Mali, Upper Volta, Niger, and Chad. In a 2,000-mile strip of western Africa south of the Sahara, millions of cattle have died and crops have failed. Dust from the drought-stricken nations have been detected in increasing amounts as far away as the skies over the Caribbean. A British-based international relief organization, Oxfam, has reported that the famine in the drought-hit area of Ogaden in Ethiopia could prove to be worse in the long term than that which the country suffered in the 1973 drought, in which some 200,000 people died. The current crisis is reported to have affected more than 800,000 people, particularly those living in that Ogaden region of Ethiopia. People fled the drought after watching their livestock, including most of the drought-resistant type animals such as goats and camels, die. 80% of their cattle, 60% of their sheep, and 30% of the camels were destroyed by that drought. In the past few months, these people have been flocking to 14 refugee camps in the region, which has sprung up since the drought began. They stay in these camps hoping for the meager food handouts that relief organizations can distribute, medical help, of course, mainly for their starving children. And these children, weakened by malnutrition already, are often worse off here because sanitation is virtually non-existent, so diarrhea and other diseases spread rapidly, and many die of these causes and dehydration. Other reports on the drought make even more grim reading. One report says the most common disease found in these centers other than diarrhea is malaria, measles, tuberculosis, pneumonia, bronchitis, whooping cough, and eye diseases. And meanwhile, it is drought in Europe. Across much of Western Europe, grain and vegetable crops were wilting in a worse drought since 1921, in the summer of 1976. On top of that, that summer brought the hottest temperatures on record in some areas that made life miserable for millions of Europeans and thousands of tourists. France and Britain were particularly hard hit. The fields of northern France, normally green dairy country, had been reduced to a barren, dusty wasteland. Water had to be brought out for the cows. They couldn't find moisture in the grass. The farmers were digging deep into what should have been next winter's fodder supplies to feed them. This was called a national calamity by the French president, and dry weather was affecting two-thirds of that nation. in the grain, dairy, and cattle-raising regions of Brittany, Normandy, and the Loire in central France, rainfall since last December had been about half the normal amount. That was for the year of 1976, from 75 to 76. Now, the only people that are really rejoicing these days in France are the wine growers, who did have what appears to be a really fantastic vintage year. All the other farmers, particularly cattle growers, were really crying about the drought conditions. The ministers of those common market nations of Europe will face problems like these as a large number of animals sent prematurely for slaughter cause low prices and a shortage of meat to come and causes many of those nations to import. When you think of the Germans eating imported sauerkraut and the Dutch eating imported cheese and the Poles eating imported hams, you get a little bit of the picture. The economic community would be exporting less and importing more to make sure of adequate supplies of basic foods. The cereal crop for the community as a whole would probably be down about 5% over the previous year, which was disappointing. In Britain, the vegetable crops would be sharply reduced as they were. Seed did not germinate in the hard ground, so the plants were sparse. They had terrible forest fires during the summer of 1976, and even though they did have a lot of rains, it was very much too early to tell whether or not later on, when they thought the drought might have been broken, this was going to do any good in time. It then meant increased prices in the shops. Where housewives were paying about 5 cents a pound for potatoes in Britain, now they're paying about 19 cents a pound. And so it goes in many other areas of foodstuffs. It hadn't rained during that summer in London from the 20th of July, clear down way late into the fall in much of the rest of the country. I was over there during that time and saw, both from the air and on the ground, the parched, uniform, brown colors of those fields, which normally are always a very striking green when you go to England. Reservoirs in England had been steadily drying up for months. It got much worse up in Northamptonshire, where several important reservoirs were only about a third full, it was reported. At Pittsford, a road which was flooded when the reservoir was created 20 years ago, it could have been seen and driven on for the first time. So unless there was substantial rainfall to come along in South Wales, the industry would have to reduce its water by 50%. In Italy, it was about the same. The Po River Valley, other fertile areas, normally agricultural areas of Italy, were very, very hard hit. Among some of the worst, Venice and Bergamo, where they had actually started water rationing. And now in the United States, water becomes a very great big worry. The natural resource of water is now becoming an increasingly short supply in the United States, just like oil. And when you hear that farmers in some of our states were driving into town to fill up their tanks at 5 cents for every 25 gallons to go back and feed their cattle, some of them 4 times a day, you begin to get the picture. That drought is also striking here. This booklet about drought, about famine, is very frightening reading, but it's serious reading and essential reading. Call right now the toll-free number 800-423-4444 for your free copy of this very striking booklet that tells you the really true global proportions of what is happening in these very frightening climatic changes. Here are quotes from leading climatologists and government experts from many nations around the world. The picture in India, Asia, Africa, and here in the United States. And particularly, what does Bible prophecy say is going to happen in the next decade or so? This booklet about drought, about famine. You ought to either call right now that toll-free number or write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, for your free copy. We'll send it to you by return mail, absolutely free of charge. In the northeastern United States, officials say, is one of the most vulnerable areas of the United States, because officials claim that if a drought as severe as that which now grips England should strike that portion of our country with water rationing, the loss of tens of thousands of jobs and widespread hardship, it would be a true national disaster. In the Pacific Southwest, a growing shortage of irrigation water is already forcing abandonment of vast acreages to the desert. As we were noticing in California through the part of December along about Christmas time, a tremendous number of articles in local newspapers, particularly in Nevada as well, one of which had a great headline that said drought and showed the picture of a reservoir that was quite well known up in the Sierra Nevadas. It looked like a puddle in the bottom of a huge, great, dry lake. I think there must have been 60 feet or more, up a shoreline visible. And the article, the captain in the picture said that the normal water level would have been clear up of the trees. So as you look at the Sierra Nevada, at the ski resorts wanting to be declared a disaster area to get emergency funds because they simply can't make their overhead and their costs, to people in the tourist resorts and others that are talking about devastating losses, to those desperate ski resorts that were making snow of their own, which is a very costly procedure and provides poor and second-best skiing to a handful of people, you get some kind of an idea. But what you don't realize probably is that that snowpack on the Sierra Nevadas is next year's and the year after's water supplies for the deep wells, for the irrigation of that very rich Central Valley in California, and the farmers and the cattle growers depend upon it. So the Pacific Southwest, particularly in California, was experiencing a growing shortage of irrigation water, and even in the Southland of Los Angeles, San Diego, Imperial, and Coachella Valleys, they were saying that we'd had so little moisture that on into the winter, even though some cold temperatures came, we were really experiencing a drought clear on through the winter. And they are now saying that if that should continue and we have another very dry summer, then it's going to be a real disaster, and we're going to feel it not only in rising costs for foodstuffs, but in actual critical shortages. Hard hit also are the Great Plains stretching from Texas to Canada. The pumps that have brought life-giving water to crops in those areas are beginning to suck dry. This problem has been pronounced on the high plains of Texas, centering on Lubbock, of course, for many years. That land was once lush with irrigation, has reverted to dry land farming, dependent on rainfall that is very sporadic and sometimes non-existent. The same fate, however, was spreading to many parts of eastern Colorado, western Kansas, and Nebraska, where irrigation wells were having to be driven deeper and deeper as the water table fell. Finally, the point came where it was too expensive to pay the cost of pumping and to still show a profit on farm crops. And out in California, as I was saying, the worst drought in 125 years appeared to have been broken, or at least interrupted by unseasonal rains in August in 1976, but that brought only very slight and temporary relief. Cattle herds have been sold off because of lack of range feed, and people even with permanent crops such as walnut orchards were finding their big trees 50 and 60 years of age were dying. At Shasta Dam, even after those rains, the water level was still dropping a foot every single day. It had been sinking by 2 feet a day, leaving boats stranded in caked mud in that reservoir. A lack of moisture in the spring of 1976 in the southern Great Plains resulted in 61% increase in land damage from wind erosion. I was flying over West Texas one time in the spring of that year, and here were red clouds of dust clear up to about 10 or 12,000 feet, and the ground completely obscure. So here was all of this topsoil from West Texas being moved over to East Texas, where it wasn't going to do anybody any good. Already by the time of that report, 3.7 million acres in Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Colorado, and New Mexico had been scoured by wind erosion. Dust storms reminiscent of the droughts of the Dust Bowl of the 1930s and the 50s had swept as far east as Wichita, Kansas. And in Kansas, by the way, 891,000 acres were damaged by wind erosion, 10 times that of the area hurt in all of 1975. Donald Dudley, who's executive director of the Oklahoma Wheat Commission, said, if it hadn't been for the new machinery and farm techniques, Oklahoma would have looked this spring every bit as bad as it did in the Dust Bowl of the 1930s. And South Dakota's official in charge of drought assistance said the state was 55.5% below average crop production for the years of 1967 through 1974. There are many quotations I now want to give you about leading experts in their field that have to do with these widespread drought conditions. Dr. Walter Orr Roberts, who is director of the National Center for Atmospheric Research, said, I personally am watching very intently for a drought in the mid-1970s in the High Plains, and he said that back in about 1970 and the turn of that decade. Dr. Irving Crick, who is a noted long-range weather forecaster, said, now we think that the latter half of the 70s will bring more general drought, extending from the southwest up, encroaching further north and east into the grain belts of Kansas, the corn areas of Iowa, Illinois, and so forth. Dr. Stephen H. Snyder is a research scientist at the Boulder, Colorado Weather Research Center, said, I would say that the odds of having drought conditions in the 70s are probably higher than they were in the 60s without any theory at all, just because we've had a very good stretch in the last 15 years in the United States. Henry Lansford of the National Center for Atmospheric Research near Boulder, Colorado, said, even if no long-term changes in climate are forthcoming, the immediate potential appears to be deadly serious. The climate trends that some scientists are predicting could bring us to a point of catastrophic consequences between the increasing population and inadequate food supplies much sooner than people expect. Dr. Reed Bryson, noted University of Wisconsin climatologist, said, the evidence is now abundantly clear that the climate of this earth is changing in a direction that is not promising in terms of our ability to feed the world. And the United States just cannot continue to feed the rest of the world. So the obvious question is, can we here continue to increase our crop output? There are two basic ways: increase acreage and raise the yield per acre. But the traditional approach to increasing production, expanding the area under cultivation, has only limited scope for the future. The most densely populated countries in the world, like Japan and several in Western Europe, have experienced a reduction in the land used for crop production in the last few decades. The Indian subcontinent and the Andean countries are losing disturbingly large acreages of cropland every single year because of severe erosion. Even in the United States, during the past 25 years, over 90 million acres have been taken out of production. In California alone, growing urban sprawl, we call them slurbs, suburbs and slums combined, claim about 375 acres of farmland every single day. Now, it's true that yield per acre has increased steadily since 1950. Corn production, for example, has grown 249% per acre in the United States. But in many countries, increases in per acre yields are beginning to slow down, especially in the United States, and we're already close to maximum yields here. The Green Revolution, which only a few years ago brought hope of agricultural self-sufficiency to India and other countries of Asia, has already lost much of its promise. One of the biggest factors in the browning of the Green Revolution is the energy crisis. India, for example, imports three critical products: fertilizer, fuel, and food grains. In 1971, those three products cost India $580 million. Today, the same quantities of these three products would cost $3.1 billion, an impossible amount for a nation that generates only $2.4 billion in foreign earnings a year. Many scientists are deeply worried about the long-range future of American agriculture and its ability to help feed a world population that is expected to double by early in the next century. And behind their worries are very disturbing trends. One, yields of virtually every major crop grown in this country have leveled off or actually declined after years of steady, often dramatic increases. Two, much of the nation's idle cropland has been rushed from fence-to-fence production in recent years, and there is a scarcity of new land that can be brought into profitable use. Third, water shortages are limiting agricultural expansion, and some cities are worried about it, and some states are worried about the use, such as the Colorado River, and they say that surface water and well water has been overdeveloped and exploited by some sprawling urban developments in many cases. Fourth, fertilizer use has reached the point where farmers cannot get proportionate increases in yield simply by dumping on more and more chemicals. And fifth, environmental concerns are slowing the use of insecticides and pesticides capable of controlling the ravages of insects and plant diseases common when you use monoculture, that is, vast agricultural acreage given over to a single crop. So unless these current patterns are broken, the experts doubt that the U.S. farmer can produce the huge food surpluses required to feed the nearly 8 billion people living on this earth by the year 2010. Today, with a world population of over 4 billion, it is estimated at least 13% of the people are suffering from malnutrition. Without U.S. farm exports, the situation would be far worse than it already is. Virgil Johnson, professor of agriculture at the University of Nebraska, says, "I'm inclined to be a pessimist over the question of our ability to meet world food needs. We're shooting at a moving target, world population. Our sources of food are finite, but world population is almost infinite. The peaking of yields for major crops underlines the seriousness of this problem. Corn yields more than doubled when farmers adopted hybrid corn and then shot up again with a widespread use of chemical fertilizers. But they have remained static throughout the 1970s. In 1972, for example, farmers produced an average of 97.1 bushels per acre, up from 28.9 bushel yield in 1940. But in 1975, corn yields averaged only 86.2 bushels, and the USDA estimates that 1976 yields would average 82.7 bushels, down again. Yields for wheat, soybeans, rice, sorghum, and cotton show a similar pattern, by the way. Wheat farmers, who still do not have an economically acceptable hybrid, after 30 years of research, have seen yields increase only slightly from the 1960s average of 26.1 bushels per acre. Farmers netted 30.6 bushels per acre in 1975, and the expected yield in 76 was 30.2, again, down slightly. What does all this mean for the future? Where do we go from here? Is the drought soon going to be broken, or is it going to get worse? Keep an eye on your weather reports, and better yet, Let us send you your free copy of the Plain Truth magazine. We have from our writers around the world, our offices that girdle the globe, not only the insight from on the spot where rapidly moving events that affect your life are occurring, but the behind the news meaning of these events in the light of Bible prophecy. The Plain Truth, four color, graphically illustrated, a tremendous magazine, rapidly moving, that really gets to the heart of some of the problems and tells you what the solutions are. If you will call right now, the toll-free number, 800-423-4444, will send you your free copy. Or listeners in California, Alaska, and Hawaii should dial area 213. The number is 577-5225. That's the Plain Truth. It comes to you absolutely free of charge. I'm concerned about the drought conditions in the United States right now because of an incredible fulfillment of biblical prophecy taking place in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and in South Dakota. There's a prophecy in the book of Amos that really makes you wonder when you find a sporadic, county by county, almost farm by farm nature of the drought that was striking in some of those areas. Farmers there were complaining that a nearby neighbor had had an average year with average rainfall, where in the adjacent county, maybe only a very few miles away, they had dug down as much as 13 feet in South Dakota and failed to find any moisture whatsoever. Now remember, in that one afflicted state, half of the cattle are already gone. They have said it will take from 7 to 9 years of normal average yearly rainfall to bring that state back to just some kind of a normal equilibrium. And here's a strange prophecy, clear back in the book of Amos in the Old Testament of your Bible, where God's word said, I have given you cleanness of teeth in all your cities, and want of bread in all your places, yet have you not returned unto me, says the Eternal. And also I have withholden the rain from you, when there were yet 3 months to the harvest, and I caused it to rain upon one city, and caused it not to rain upon another city. One piece was rained upon, and the piece whereupon it rained not withered. So two or three cities wandered unto one city to drink water, but they were not satisfied, yet have you not returned unto me, says the Eternal. Is there any real cause and effect between a nation which defies the laws of God, the Word of God, and the Son of God, turns its back on the truth of the Bible and a way of life, those living laws which act upon us and which if we break are going to break us? Is there any cause and effect between the way of life in our nations and what is happening to our weather? The Bible says there is. Most people scoff and say there isn't. Interestingly enough, in one of the ski resorts in Colorado not long ago, when President Ford was vacationing over the Christmas holiday, it was said that he was going to get his exercise by walking the dog, and his daughter Susan had taken her tennis racket along. Also, I noticed that up in Utah, at one of the famous ski resorts, they had decided to ask some of the local Indian tribes to come along and put on a rain dance to pray to the god of snow. They thought maybe that might work. No one had thought about praying to the real God who controls the weather and says that he can give rain in due season, apparently. At least I didn't read anything about that in the newspapers. You need to ask whether or not there is a connection between the very sporadic, city-by-city, county-by-county type of drought we're experiencing in some of these states and this Bible prophecy that said the kind of drought that would come upon us would be one city would have plenty of water and another city nearby within walking distance would be totally dry and experiencing drought conditions. Write for this booklet, Famine, Can We Survive? It gives you all of the information that I've given you here from documented statistical sources, and it's absolutely free of charge. And the current number of the Plain Truth magazine, we'd like to send these to you by return mail as soon as we have your name and address. Call the toll-free number, 800-423-4444. Listeners in California, Alaska, and Hawaii should dial area 213-577-5225. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong, sponsored by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your requests along with the call letters of this station to Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Or you may dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444.